This episode is brought to you by SD Sober Living. If you or someone you know needs a safe and supportive recovery home, then reach out to SD Sober Living at www.sdsoberliving.org or call 619-625-0769. That's 619-625-0769. Come get some San Diego recovery and some fuck fentanyl at SD Sober Living.
Oh, you'll never love me. I pretend that you love me. You'll always be the reason I stay clean.
Welcome to the Fuck Fentanyl Podcast. I am Luis Romero. I am the Fuck Fentanyl guy. Today we got a special guest. We got my friend Chelsea.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
Hell yeah. I'm really stoked to have you on here. Chelsea's one of my friends who I've met through my brand, and you know, we're also in recovery as well. Chelsea's just really like one of the like the most like sweetest, nicest people I've ever met. And I really, I'm really looking forward to having you on here.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. And I was really stoked that you asked me.
Yeah. And it's cool because we were talking a little bit before and I was getting a little of your background. And you just want to start us off and how'd you grow up and all that?
Yeah. So I was actually born out here in La Mesa.
Okay.
And I grew up in East County. My mom was an addict.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was also an addict, you know, okay. The get down.
Okay.
And for a long time, it was just my mom and I. Mm-hmm. And then like
Two years.
After I was born, she had my brother. Mm-hmm. And so it was the three of us for a bit. But, you know, they get down when your parents are addicts. And
yeah.
Right after I turned three, she got CPS involved.
Okay.
And that just kind of started mm-hmm. everything, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm.
Things went down.
Right, exactly. We went to Polinsky the day that she ended up getting arrested.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Polinsky is a center for...
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's an emergency services center.
Okay.
And that was kind of like the beginning of our journey, you know? It was really confusing for me
because mm-hmm.
It had always been just the three of us, you know?
Yeah.
And so, because my brother was younger than I was, we were in different parts of the center.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he was in the nursery and I was in a different part. And I just remember crying.
Oh, crying, that's so sad.
Crying so much to the point where they were like, shut this kid up.
Jesus.
And so I was
How old were you?
He was 18 months.
Oh, okay. So, he's like a baby.
So I was like 3 and a half because we're 2 years and 1 month apart from each other.
Okay, gotcha.
And so then after that, they moved us to El Centro where...
Oh, beautiful El Centro.
Yeah, love it there.
Oh, yes.
Shout out the valley, you know.
Woo! I haven't done the air horn in a minute.
Yes, got the air horn. And so we were in El Centro for a bit, and we were growing up with my dad's parents. So my nana and my tata. And,
okay.
And there was some crime that was committed within the family. And so... we weren't able to stay there anymore, which mm-hmm. kind of started like this cycle of bouncing around.
Gotcha.
Because we were in the foster care system, you know.
Okay.
But we were really lucky that we didn't have to be bounced around for too long. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember going to my aunt's, and then we went to this gnarly foster home for a couple months.
Okay.
And then I was adopted by my mom's aunt and uncle. So okay. My great aunt and uncle. And we moved to Chicago. And so I grew up in Chicago from about the time I was 5 until 2018. I was like 22, okay. Something like that.
All right.
But I remember being really confused as a kid, you know?
Really?
And I didn't really understand what was going on. I missed my mom.
Yeah.
And I was in this new environment where I didn't know anyone, you know, like even when we were being bounced around, I was in these like Hispanic households, you know, eating Hispanic food and speaking Spanish, you know. And so moving to Chicago in this suburban neighborhood with a bunch of white people.
it's a culture shock.
It was a culture shock. It was really confusing for me. And you know, after we had moved to Chicago, my mom wasn't allowed to call us.
Oh, wow. Got to that point.
Yeah. Well, my parents did their best to protect us, you know, even if it meant protecting us from my mom.
I see.
And so she wasn't allowed to call.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I remember asking to like talk to my mom and you know, my other mom. I call them both mom.
Okay,
it gets confusing.
You got two moms.
Yeah, I'm so lucky. You know, so lucky. She looked at me and she was like, "I'm your mom now."
Wow.
And that was confusing for me.
Fuck yeah.
You know, because my mom was my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
We had this very strong connection with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so even as like a young kid, I was always looking for ways to escape. I've never had any coping skills, and so I would create these like fantasies, you know. And I had this older sister, and right around like first grade when Harry Potter came out.
Oh yeah, I love Harry Potter.
I know, I love Harry Potter. she took us to the movie theaters, right?
Uh-huh.
And it like sparked something inside me to where I was like, I'm waiting for I'm waiting for my letter from Hogwarts, right? Like
you're gonna be a wizard.
This is my fucking ticket out, you know? And and for so long I was so embarrassed about it. And then finally, like, I disclosed it to my mom like shortly after I had gotten into the rooms, and she was like, "It gave you hope, you know?
Yeah.
It gave you a way to cope with the constant confusion that you were living in, you know." And then after that, it turned into like writing letters about running away, just like looking for any way to escape my reality, you know. And my parents, they're great. I love them so much. And they did the absolute best that they could, right? But they were both retired Marines. And so it was a very strict environment.
Okay, yeah.
There were high expectations placed on me. It was a very authoritarian type of environment, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that was hard.
Were they pressing like military on you and stuff
like
that?
Like, joining the military, not so much, but like the environment that I grew in was just so structured, and like I would get in trouble and they would be yelling at me, and I'd be like fucking standing at attention like a damn soldier, you know. But like, that's something that I still do to this day. Like when I start having like these uncomfortable conversations with people, and I want to escape the conversation, but I can't. I become like like a fucking soldier standing at attention. Like my posture gets all straight. And like my face, there's no emotion. And I just like stand there and just stare at you blankly, you know? Going into high school, that was like a big transition for me, right? And so I talked about how I didn't have any coping skills. Well, like, one of them was like sucking my thumb, right?
Oh,
like,
okay.
Like I sucked my thumb for a really long time. And like right before high school, I stopped doing that.
Okay.
And then within a couple weeks, I was doing drugs.
Oh, shit.
Because I didn't have any coping skills. And, and like at first it started off as like, you know, smoking weed and drinking, you know, like for other kids, that's like normal high school behavior, right?
Yeah.
But for me, it was looking for a way to escape. And and like my mom, the one I had growing up, she was really sick all the time, you know, which resulted in her being in bed a lot, and my dad was out of town working a lot. So like, even though the environment that I was in was really strict and I couldn't really do anything, no one was paying attention to me either, you know, unless I was getting in trouble.
It feels like that.
Right, exactly. And so I went through high school doing normal kid shit for the most part. I was in sports and all of that. And then my senior year of high school, there was this dude that I had dated like on and off all 4 years of high school. He died.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. What happened?
He died. I never got a straight story.
Wow,
about it,
really?
But at the time, he was a student at Illinois State University.
Okay, yeah.
And so, like, frat parties and stuff like that. Essentially, the story that I got was that he left the party one night really drunk. And this is in Illinois, right? Yeah. So, in January, the weather gets to, like, negative 20s.
Oof, and fuck that.
I want to say the night he passed, it got down to like negative 27.
Oh, Jesus
and
Christ.
So he left and they found him on a park bench. And that's like,
all
I really know. Right. But it was the hardest thing that I had ever had to go through.
Yeah.
Because there is this long history of abandonment, right, from like these various people in my life. And so even though like I know he didn't intentionally abandon me, right, was just like it was another perceived abandonment. And it was the first experience of loss that I had had in a really long time. And I couldn't cope, you know. I wasn't eating. I was just crying all the time, or I was fighting people because I just like couldn't cope.
You're so hurt.
Right. And then one day, it was a couple weeks after he had passed, like someone had given me a Xanax. Right. And I was so sheltered, I didn't know what the fuck Xanax was.
You just saw this random pill.
Right. And so someone hands me a yellow school bus and they're like, just fucking take this. Like, we can't handle the way that you're operating.
Oh my God.
Right?
Take a chill pill.
Right. No, literally, take a fucking chill pill, because like everyone knows me as this like bubbly individual.
Yeah.
Right. But like, that wasn't me. You know, I was a fucking mess. And so someone hands me a pill and I don't know what the fuck it is, but like I take it.
Yeah.
And that was my first experience of doing drugs outside of just like smoking weed or drinking. And from there it was fucking on, right?
Yeah.
Because this pill, it had quieted my mind.
And
and it resulted in me not feeling anything, and I didn't have to fucking try so hard to fit in with all of the people around me. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of sparked like years of drug use, right? And mm-hmm. and I had taken the Xanax, and then it led to like ecstasy, and I was taking ecstasy every weekend with my friends. And at the time, like, all of that drug use went unnoticed because my mom was in Oregon taking care of my grandma, mm-hmm. and my dad was working all the time. So I had pretty much a fucking free-for-all that year.
Yeah,
all they right. cared about was that, like, my grades were good,
right.
And I was still in sports.
Right.
And so
the surface was great.
Right. On the surface, everything was good. And then I have a tendency to use relationships to fill that void.
Right? Yeah.
That's how it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so shortly after, my ex had passed.
Yeah.
I immediately got into a relationship. Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's pretty common territory.
Right. Exactly. But he was just, you know, this skinny little white boy who was selling drugs. Ah!
A real winner.
Had just dropped out of school.
Oh, yes. I'm
like, that's yes. the fucking love of my life right there.
Don't worry, baby.
Right. He's like, he's like, I'm going to support us off these dime bags, baby.
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah.
A little rapper, too. You know,
oh, he is a rapper. Was he selling his mixtapes?
Right. You know they get down.
Yeah.
And so, so I was rolling around with him, and like that was like my first experience of yeah. like that kind of life, you know. Mm-hmm. And like he wasn't even really in it, it was just like scratching the surface, and I'm right. like, oh fuck, like this is cool, I'm mm-hmm. hanging out with people mm-hmm. that like accept me,
yeah,
right. And at that point, like, I was doing anything to feel accepted, and like they saw me and they thought that I was funny. And so
yeah,
so I rolled around with him and his friends for a bit, and then like 2 weeks after my high school graduation, mm-hmm. I pierced my nose, right?
Oh, fuck and, yeah.
Right. And, well, yeah, I'm saying fuck yeah because I'm like rebellion, baby.
Yeah, but, yeah, yeah.
But like, my parents.
They oh, were they not, were saying fuck yeah.
No. They were not even fucking close. And so, you know.
Is it the one that you have right now?
Yeah, well, I have two right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was looking at it right now.
Man, I'm going to be like 85 with both my nose rings yeah. in just for like rebellion.
Fuck
baby.
Yeah.
Like, just out of fucking spite. But like. So I pierced my nose, and the next day, like, the basement had flooded, and so we're cleaning everything out, yeah. and my mom looks at me, and she's like, what the fuck is that? And yeah. I said it nonchalantly and, like, shrugged my shoulders,
yeah,
like, right? And I'm like, it's a nose ring.
It's a nose ring, yeah.
And she calls my dad out, and she's like, Kevin,
so funny.
Look at what the fuck your daughter did.
Oh, my God. Making a whole big fucking deal about it.
It was the biggest thing ever. And, and so my dad looked at me, and he gave me the option, right? And he was like, take it out or get the fuck out.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And
a fucking nose ring? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? It wasn't even a nose ring yet. It was just like a little fucking stud.
Oh,
okay?
Yeah, like those little...
Barely, right, like barely noticeable, oh, but whatever. Whatever. But, you know, I had been hanging out with that dude and like...
Okay.
And like getting these like little blips of like freedom, right? And,
yeah.
And so I was like, fuck that. Mm-hmm. I'm getting the fuck out.
Wow.
I have a fucking curfew here. I have yeah. to hide when I'm doing drugs. Like,
yeah.
Like, fuck that.
Yeah.
I can go live with homeboy, right?
Oh,
I mean,
in the studio. Oh fuck yeah! And where was he living when this happened?
So he was living with his parents.
Ah, I knew it. I was like, this motherfucker lives with his parents in their basement or some shit.
He sure did. He sure did. And so I moved in with him, and you know how it is in the beginning. It's all good, mm-hmm. and he was very against my drug use.
Oh, because
at this point, like, I was taking Xanax every day, mm-hmm. and I was taking ecstasy probably damn near every day, too.
Oh, okay.
And so he wasn't cool with it. And so he was like, if you're going to live with me, the only drugs you can do is you can smoke weed, but that's it.
Okay.
And so there's, like, this time period, I want to say, like, a year, mm-hmm. a year and a half, something like that, where, like, all I'm doing is smoking weed. Right.
Okay. But,
like, I'm one of those addicts where, like, I can't smoke weed. It makes me fucking crazy.
It's not fun anymore.
No, and you know what? Smoking weed is always going to be fun for me. It's everything that comes when I'm not high. You know?
Oh, okay.
My inability to cope with life. Mm-hmm. And so, for the first couple months of me living there, it was okay, right? But, the way that I grew up was my parents were middle class, right?
Yeah.
And so living with him, it was my first experience of poverty.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
It was my first experience of not being able to access food and, like, being worried about whether or not the home is going to go into foreclosure.
Yeah.
And it was really eye-opening for me, right? Because I had never lived like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually the fights between my ex and I, they would get really bad.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember, like, one day, it was like right after he started putting his hands on me. Oh. I'm like sitting in the garage and he's doing some little freestyle, right? It's fucking shit, man. It's one of the worst things that I've ever heard, right? But I'm sitting there and I'm like hyping him up because I'm like smiling and vibing.
Yeah,
with
you're
it.
Killing. You're killing.
Right, like, you're killing it. But in my head, I'm like, if I don't fucking hype this dude up, he's gonna beat my ass.
Oh,
right?
My god. Right. Oh no. Oh my god. Fucking SoundCloud rapper.
Oh man, fuck those SoundCloud rappers. It's always the little, like, skinny white boys too, right? but so in the beginning, like, I wouldn't hit him back. You know, I would just take it. And then eventually,
oh God.
Eventually I'm like, fuck this. You know, this isn't how I was fucking raised. I was raised by two Marines and they taught me that if someone puts their fucking hands on me, I better knock them the fuck out. Right.
Fuck yeah.
And and so I started putting my hands back on him. Right. And
like, good.
And like, that was the first experience that I had where, like, I was actually fighting back, right? And and I liked the way it felt because I was able to get all of this, like, anger and all of this confusion that I had been holding on to for so long out. And so I lived with him.
Did you whoop his ass?
And you know what? I'm not a big person.
Right? Yeah, you know, I was about to say that. You're a really small person.
But, like, he wasn't that much bigger than me, so...
You put up your own.
Right. So, like, I can't really say that I beat his ass back, but, like, there was definitely a fucking fight.
Hell yeah. Wow. My God. Yeah, because you're so small. You're, like, half my size.
Right. And so, I want to say I was with him for, like, 2 years or something like that. And, eventually he tried to strangle me, right?
Oh, jeez.
That was like my first experience with like someone literally trying to kill me.
Yeah.
And like, his eyes were fucking black. Oof. And that's when I stopped fighting him.
Hmm.
And, somewhere along the way, I got reconnected with my biological mom. Mm-hmm. She had like found me on Twitter.
Oh wow!
And, yeah,
Twitter.
All fucking places where she finds me on Twitter, but it was actually like her ex-husband at the time.
Okay.
Gotcha. And he was like, "Hey, I don't know if you remember who I am. I don't know if you know anything about me, but I'm your mom's husband, mm-hmm. and she would really love to get into contact with you." Mm. And he gave me her number. And
wow.
And so, like, I'm looking at this message. It's like middle of the fucking night. And I'm like, like,
yeah, know, like, right.
Fucking panicking. Okay. Fuck. And I didn't know what the fuck to do.
Yeah.
Because my life, it was so chaotic. I wasn't really talking to my parents at mm-hmm. the time. Like, we had built, like, a little bit of a relationship back, but like there was just so much resentment against yeah. them, because like me or a fucking nose ring, you know?
Yeah, but, right.
But like their mentality is, it's like old school, right? It's my house and it's my fucking rules, mm. and like that's just how they were raised, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I would do was I would star 6-7 my mom.
Oh.
Yeah, I would star 6-7 her, and I would call her, and we would talk, and it was always like, so like at the time I had this like plug, right, who mm-hmm. who she slacked so fucking hard, so fucking hard, and so I'd be sitting there waiting for damn near 2 hours.
Damn. Oh, terrible service.
She was fucking worse, man. But like as I'm sitting there waiting, I'm like, yeah, this is a good time to call my mom.
Well, I'm waiting to get my dope.
Right, no, literally. That's literally how it was.
Fuck yes.
And I would sit there and I would start 6-7 her because I wasn't sure if I wanted to have that relationship with her, right?
Like, yeah.
I didn't know anything about her. I didn't know anything about recovery. And and like growing up, she was a no topic. No one fucking talked about her.
Really?
I wasn't allowed to ask about Jesus. Her. And like for my brother, because he was younger, he didn't fucking remember her anyways.
Yeah.
Our life in Chicago was all that he knew.
Yeah.
But me, like, do I have a very vivid memory of it? No.
No.
But, like, I remember her, you mm-hmm. know? And
it's almost like they want you just completely forget about her.
Right. And the very few times that she would come up, she was always painted as a monster.
Yeah.
This, like, monster who chose the drugs over her kids. And yeah. And that was confusing for me because, like, that's not how I remembered her,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I have, like, a really hard time remembering people,
mm-hmm.
right? But I do remember the way that they made me feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just remember her as, like, warm and loving and
yeah.
safe. And I remember there was, like, one time I'm in Oregon and I'm visiting my grandma because
mm-hmm.
that's technically her grandma.
Sure.
And so I'm looking through photo albums and I come across a picture
of her. Yeah.
And, like, I knew exactly who it was, right?
Yeah.
But, like, I'm this little kid, so I'm like, who is that? Mm-hmm. You know, because mm-hmm. I'm, like, trying to pry. And,
yeah.
And my grandma was like, oh, that's your mom.
Wow.
And my mom, my other mom, was standing behind me, mm-hmm. and she was like, that's not her mom, and, like, snatched the photo album.
Jesus Christ, made a scene.
And then, like, in the middle of the night, like, I woke up because I wanted to go look at that picture.
Yeah.
You know, that's all that I had of her.
Mm-hmm.
And the picture was gone.
Oof, damn.
And so that was, like, one of the very many lessons that I had, that she was a no topic.
Mm.
And so when she came back into my life, I had always held space for her in my heart, you know, like I had always wanted her to come back into my life. And so when I would call her, it wasn't asking about the drugs or why she chose the drugs over me. I didn't want those answers. Like, I just wanted to know what I was like as a kid. I wanted to know the things that I said and the things that I did and who I was, because, like, I didn't know anything about myself. And the perception that my mom in Chicago has of me versus what my mom out here has, they're two very different perceptions.
Yeah.
And so my mom would always tell me these little stories about me and how much I loved my brother and how protective I was and like all of the sweet little things that I would say, you know? And so it didn't take very long for me to stop calling her on private, you know?
And, okay.
And she came into my life at the perfect time, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't know how much I needed her.
Yeah.
You know? And I would call her about the chaos in my life and all of the things. And she knew that my life was crazy, but she never, like, called me out on it, right? Like, would just...
Just listen.
Right. She would just listen. She would give me that, like, safe space to, like, build a friendship with her and, like, build a connection with her. And, like, one of the most meaningful things about our relationship is that she didn't come in and try and be my mom.
Yeah.
She didn't try and, like, take the place of the woman who raised me. She just wanted to be a part of my life no matter what that looked like. And so I want to say it was, like, 7 or 8 months after she had come into my life, I flew out to visit her.
Okay.
Right.
For the first time.
And I'm like, I get off the plane and I'm looking around the airport, right? And like, I didn't know what this woman fucking looked like. And then, like, I turn around and I see her and, like, I just, like, instantly knew. And,
no, like, shit.
We both just, like, stood there, like, staring at each other for a minute. Like, holy shit, this is real, right? And then, so I was there for like a week and I got to know her.
Where was she living at?
She was in Lakeside at the
time. Oh, okay, yeah. So here in San Diego County.
Yeah. She's East County.
Oh, okay. East County. All right. And so when you reconnected with your mother, she was already in recovery?
Yeah, she had been clean for a couple years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's, I think she's coming up on like 13 or 14 years now.
Oh, fuck.
Like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
But so, like, looking at me, it's very, at the time, it was very obvious that I was an addict, right? The way that I dressed, the way I behaved, how tiny I was. I mean, like, if you think I'm little now, you should have seen me before.
Really?
Fucking gnarly, okay? And but she never said anything about it. She just, like, let me live my life. And so I would come out and I would visit her once a year for like 3 or 4 years, something like that. And then I was, you know, dating another winner.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A new SoundCloud rapper.
No, he wasn't a SoundCloud rapper, okay? But he was my dealer.
So he qualified.
Right. And so, like, when I was with him, that was, like, my real introduction into, like, crime and and using and all of that. And my life was so fucking unmanageable.
Yeah.
And there are some parts, right, that I would tell her about and she'd be like, girl, be careful. I don't want you to get locked up, right? But she wouldn't say anything more than that.
Yeah. She didn't want to make you feel judged or
right. She just gave me like a safe space. And so at some point during that relationship, I started to fucking hate myself and hate my life. And I used to hate the shit that I was doing. And I used to hate the stuff that the people that I was hanging out with was doing. And it made me hate my fucking life.
Yeah.
And I was using right, but I didn't realize like how unmanageable it made my life, you know?
Yeah.
And so that ex and I came out to visit.
Okay.
And we spent like the week with her, mm-hmm. and then she didn't see me again for a year, right? And that year was a living fucking hell.
Ah, see, so that was a reason.
It was a living fucking hell. I couldn't stop using.
Yeah.
And because my ex was my dealer, like I had endless access.
And part of the relationship.
Right. And so it was so unmanageable. And then like, it is only by the grace of God that I did not get locked up.
Yeah.
Right. And like it was another toxic relationship. We were doing what we were doing together.
Yeah.
And we were fighting, right? And and it was the second relationship that I had had where some dude was putting hands on me and I'm fuck this.
And you're fighting back.
Right. I'm like, fuck this. I'm tired of people punking me, man. Like, I'm not a fucking punk. I'll swing. But, like, I hated it, right? Because on the inside, like, I'm a fucking soft girl. I don't want to fight. I just want to be loving and kind and I don't want to put my hands on people. But like,
well, it's not normal to.
Right, it's not fucking normal. But like, I had grown so accustomed to it that like, I was it was normalized for me, and it resulted in me thinking that like, I could put my fucking hands on anyone, and like I had said before, like. I kind of liked fighting because it got all of that fucking anger out.
Yeah.
Like, the way that I can explain it is, like, it would just build up so fucking high that, like, I needed to get it out. And, like, fighting was the only way for me to get that shit out. And, like, I can honestly say that I've never fought a woman.
That's fucking awesome.
Women are just so like delicate, and like despite all of my mommy issues, like I still love women, right?
I wouldn't
put my hands on women, but like random dudes in a bar, like hey, it's
sup, homie.
All of a sudden, you forgot how to say excuse me, like fucking wild.
What the fuck you looking at?
No, right.
Well, that's so crazy. Well, that's immediately in my mind, you know. I've never gotten any domestic thing. That was just not my thing. If I see a really small person, a woman, whatever, it's not in my nature to harm them.
Right.
Even if my feelings are hurt, even if I'm feeling disrespected, whatever, it's just not my nature to do that. So when people do that, it makes me very angry.
And it's confusing because it's not normal.
It's not. And it's not. Right. And it shouldn't be accepted.
Right. But, you know, I can't sit here and act like the victim because at one point in the relationship, like, I did turn into the aggressor.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
100%. Like,
Where are my drugs, motherfucker?
Well, I started robbing him. dude. Like,
give me that.
No, literally, or like I find out that he was like cheating on me, and I'm like, "Oh, fine, I'm just gonna take your drugs.
It's on.
I'm just gonna take your drug. This is like the cheating tax, you know?
Yeah. You fucking punk, give me your shit.
Right. So eventually, my life had gotten so unmanageable that I decided I didn't want to live my life anymore. You know, and so like one night I took a bunch of pills. It was like a bunch of Xanax, like I want to say it was like 13 of them.
Yeah.
Trying to like kill myself. And
oh, jeez.
And like I woke up the next morning and I was fine.
Wow.
I was totally fucking fine.
Oh my God. You were able to take 14 Xanax?
And I'm like, girl, you're such a fuck up that you can't even kill yourself properly.
Fuck.
You know? And I was so fucking hard on myself. And like at the time, like the night that I tried to kill myself, my dude was out cheating on me. Right. And so he came home. He came home the next morning and I swung on him like the second that he walked in the door because I knew what the fuck he was doing. And I was so angry about the fact that I was not successful in ending my life that I'm like, I'm going to take it out on you. Yeah. You are the fucking problem.
Yeah.
You are causing everything wrong in my life and mm-hmm. I don't fucking respect you. So I'm going to put my fucking hands on you.
Yeah.
And so he, of course, beat my ass
because because
I'm a tiny little person. And then after he was done beating my ass, he was like, well, you know, I got a side job, so I got to go.
Damn, dude. What a fucking piece of shit. Oh, I got to go to work in a little bit.
That's literally how it was. It's like, I got a side job, so I gotta go, right?
Oh, my fucking God, dude.
And I was like, fuck this. And so I decided I was going to hang myself.
Oh, Jesus.
And so I went and I did it. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm regaining consciousness. And he's looking at me with these big eyes. These massive eyes because he had just saved my fucking life.
Mm.
And he had forgotten his wallet, which is the only reason why he had come back into the apartment. And I was so fucking angry because, like I said, I blamed him for all of my problems. And so this person who is ruining my life just saved my fucking life. Yeah. And so of course, like the first thing I do is I call my mom because my mom was Captain Save a Hope for me.
When you're ready.
Right. And she was like, I'm really glad that you didn't kill yourself because you would have ruined my birthday for the rest of my life.
Oh fuck.
That is how selfish and self-centered the disease of addiction is.
Yeah.
I tried to kill myself on her fucking birthday, and I didn't even realize that it was her fucking birthday. And so I went and I did my little stint in the psych ward, and honestly, I fucking thrived in the psych ward.
Oh, okay? Yeah?
Because you know what? I grew up with structure.
Yeah.
And so the psych ward is structured, and I'm okay, I'm with all these crazy ass fools, and it's kind of a free for all, but it's kind of structured, and like I'm fucking thriving.
I like this.
But you know, they drug test you, and there was a fucking laundry list of drugs in my system because for me.
Yeah.
I didn't discriminate when it came to my drugs.
Whatever you got.
Whatever you fucking got. Whatever you fucking got. It was mainly like Coke and Xanax and towards the end a little bit of heroin, but
okay.
But it was pretty much like whatever the fuck I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
And so they had told me about everything that was on my drug test.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, if you want to get out of the psych ward, you have to go to an addictions group. Oh. And I'm like,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm not a fucking addict.
I'm
not a fucking addict.
The and fuck, man.
And the counselor in the psych ward, man, he looked at me and he was like, people who are addicts don't do heroin. Or people who aren't addicts don't do heroin. And I was like, fuck.
Ah. Well, now that you say it like that.
I'm like, fuck. But I'm like, all right, well, I'm trying to get home to my dude. So if this is the only way I'm going to get out. Like,
Oh, I love that. I'm like the codependency is already like.
No, in my head, I'm like, I'm trying to get home to beat his ass for saving my life.
You're not adding this. You're right. That's fucking awesome. Oh, man. Rescued you from a suicide and you're going to beat his ass.
No. That's how fucking sick
you ruined my plans, you fucker.
I know. Like, fuck you. Here you are again ruining my life and trying to save it. Like, I'm not the fucking problem here, bro.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Sick. It's so gnarly. But so I went to this addictions group, right? And I'm hearing some of the things that they're saying, right? And I'm hearing, but I'm not really listening. But it's like kind of planting this little baby seed. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, maybe I am an addict.
Okay.
But it didn't matter. Like, I got out of the psych ward the next day and yeah. I went home and did my drugs.
Yeah, typically how it goes.
Right. And so this relationship that I was in, I was done with it, right? But like, I also felt trapped because I'm like, I'm living this lifestyle and like, as much as I hate the lifestyle, like, I'm addicted to it, you know?
Yeah.
And he supplies my drugs.
Yeah.
And so I was scared to leave because, you know, I use people. And so he was providing me things. And so, of course, I was going to stay.
Yeah.
And so my mom, she was like, just come out here.
Okay.
Just come out here. You can live with me. You can start working. And we'll figure it out. And so I'm like, okay, well, you know, I made up all these excuses, right?
Yeah, of course.
Well, I can't move right now. This happened in May. So mm-hmm. I was like, I can't move right now, but I can be out there by July.
You know? That's a good amount of time.
I'm like, I need to save a little bit of money. And she was like, dude, I'll give you money. It's not about the money. Like, yeah. I just don't want you to fucking die.
Yeah.
And so, So I was like, yeah, I'll be there in July.
Don't worry, July.
And I'm still doing my drugs. And he started cheating on me again.
Oh,
you know,
man.
It never fucking stopped, you know? And like, my part is that I stayed.
Yeah.
But internally, there was this part of me that was like, if I just do everything that he wants me to do, I'm going to be worthy and he's going to stay. And mm-hmm. and like, everyone always leaves, and he hasn't left yet, you yeah. know, he's just, you know, abandoned me in every other way possible.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But he hasn't left yet. He's still here. So like, I can still
see. He hasn't terminated the relationship yet.
Right,
so.
Right. And so the very last time that he cheated on me, I was like, why the fuck am I not good enough? Why the fuck is it that everyone fucking leaves, you know? And so it caused me to get suicidal again. But like, I had been so close to death already that like, I didn't want to fucking die. I just needed to escape the reality that I was living in. Mm-hmm. And so I called my mom and I was like, I'm coming sooner than expected. And like, and like, I packed up my shit and I left. And yeah. I drove my little Nissan Altima from Chicago mm-hmm. all the way to El Cajon, right?
Oh,
and,
fuck.
And like, on the way, I'm
yeah.
doing the last of my drugs.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
for sure.
So, like, by the time I got here, like, I didn't have any more drugs.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And so I got here and I slept for, like, days.
Oh, shit.
Days.
Just crashed out.
Yeah, and I was so sick, you know? And, like, at the time, I didn't know what the fuck was happening because I always had drugs in my system.
Gotcha.
But, like, I was withdrawing. And, like, my mom knew it, but she didn't fucking say anything,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I moved out here right around her clean date.
Oh, wow.
And so the day that I was finally, like, up and moving around,
mm-hmm.
she was like, I'm taking a token tonight. Do you want to come?
Wow.
Yeah. And so she brought me to the meeting, and that was my first experience in the rooms of Narcotics
Anonymous. Wow. Crazy.
Yeah. And I remember sitting there, and I'm listening to all of the readings, mm-hmm. and someone read Who is an Addict? And I'm like, okay, that kind of fucking resonates, you know?
Right.
But then someone started reading Why Are We Here? And I started fucking bawling.
Wow.
Crying. Hysterically in this fucking meeting.
Ugly crying and in the meeting.
Right. And so my mom hadn't seen me for an entire year prior.
Yeah.
You know? Right. And so during that year, like, her fear was that I was going to get locked up.
Mm-hmm.
But then she saw me, and I was, verbatim, what she has said is that I was a fucking walking corpse.
Oh, Jesus.
I was so tiny. I was like 79 pounds.
Wow.
I mean, so fucking small. Oh, I was small, depressed, pale. Yeah. Like, it was so bad, you know? And so after that meeting, there is this dude that walked up to me, and the first thing he said to me was like, "Girl, you look like you need a cheeseburger." And I was like,
wow.
And I was like, yeah, these are my people. Fuck yeah.
Fuck, dude.
But I couldn't come to terms that I was an addict.
Yeah.
Right? Even though everything resonated with me, like, I couldn't come to terms with it because my mom was an addict, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she lost her kids, and I'm nothing like her.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't going to meetings, but I also, like, wasn't really getting high. Like, I was smoking weed.
Okay.
But that was it.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, like, I use people. And so as soon as I moved here, I'm on fucking dating apps, right?
Tinder.
Right. And I'm trying to meet men. And so a couple days after I moved here, I'm on a date with this dude, right?
Yeah.
And he picks me up, and he's drinking vodka out of a water bottle.
Oh, a winner again.
And I'm like, fuck, dude. Like, he's my type.
He's my type. God damn, dude. What a gentleman.
Right. And it's like fucking 10 o'clock in the morning because we're going to the zoo.
I needed to know that detail. Sneaking in vodka at the zoo. No, hell yeah.
But then we get to the zoo and he pulls out a bag of blow. And I'm
yes. Like,
fuck.
Is this the first date?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah. Yes, dude.
Yeah, I got a type, you know? But, like, even though I couldn't admit that I was an addict, I knew that the drugs ruined my life.
Okay.
And so he's, like, trying to get me to do these bumps. And I'm of course. Nah, bro, I'm good. I'm so good. Thank you so much.
You want
to
do cocaine in the sky for me?
Right. And so finally, I'm so uncomfortable. I'm like, let's go inside, right?
Yeah.
And so he's so fucked up that he falls out of the car.
Oh, fuck yes.
He falls out of the car, and I was like, fuck this. My God. I need to find a way to get the fuck out of this situation.
That is the greatest first date I've ever heard.
And so we're walking in. And all of a sudden, he's like, oh, I gotta pee. And I was like, thank fucking God. And I'm like, okay, for sure. Like, I'm gonna wait right here. And I waited until he was, like, out of view. And I ran to security.
Save me from this.
And I call my mom to come pick me up, you know? I'm like, God. I'm like, Mom, help me. I'm scared.
Oh my God.
And so she comes to pick me up, but, like, you also have to think about it, like, that she, like, left work, like, she was working from home, right? But she had to stop working to come get me.
Yeah, of course.
And so I get in the car and she's like, what the fuck happened? And so I tell her and she's like, dude, you're a fucking addict. And if you want to live in my house, you have to start going to meetings.
Oh, shit.
And in my head, I'm so confused because I'm like, I wasn't even the one doing the drugs.
Well, technically, yeah, you're right.
Right, but I didn't know what an addict was.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know that it wasn't about the drugs. It's about the
behavior.
The behavior, the unmanageability, the fucking chaos and the insanity. Yeah. And so it didn't make sense to me why she was saying that. But I'm like, her house, her rules. Mm-hmm. I'm not about to get kicked out in a state where I don't fucking know a single person besides her. So I started going to meetings.
Okay.
And she told me that if I wanted to live in her house, I couldn't do drugs, including smoking weed.
Oh, she established boundaries this time.
No, she put up strong boundaries, including smoking weed. I had to do 90 and 90.
Wow.
Yeah, she was real serious about it.
She put you in a sober living house pretty much.
No, that's literally what it was. Yeah. It was like a sober living but without the curfew.
Yeah.
And so I stayed in the rooms for like 6 months, but I was still drinking the whole time.
Oh, you snuck in there. Huh?
Right, well, because I'm from Chicago and everyone in Chicago is a drinker. That's just how it is.
Oh, fuck yeah.
The south side of Chicago, it's a white Irish community, and so everyone drinks. And so in my mind, like, alcohol wasn't a drug. No matter how many times I heard it in the readings, alcohol was not a drug for me.
Yeah,
Maybe for you guys. Maybe for you, fucker. But
I can handle it.
But so I had a really hard time connecting with people in the rooms. Because my mom would tell people who I am, mm-hmm. and it made it very difficult for me because I felt like I was living in her shadow.
Oh, and, fuck yeah.
And the friends,
I could see that.
And the friends that I had made, I was like, do y'all like me, or are you just friends because you know my mom?
Gotcha.
But so... I was hanging out with normies because of it, and I was drinking. And the other part was, like, I had a really hard time leaving the lifestyle that I was living. You know, like, the crime aspect, fine. Like, I could leave it behind.
Sure.
But, like, going to the bars.
That, I was about to ask that. Like, you probably are so used to going out and drinking and mingling and all that.
Bars and clubs, like... That part was really hard for me to leave behind. And I looked at all of you guys and I'm like, you guys are fucking lame.
Right. Totally.
I'm 22 years old. So
you're so young.
I know. And everyone would talk about it too. And it would make me feel so uncomfortable. That's why when I see a new girl in the rooms, I don't fucking talk about her age. And I don't make comments like, oh, my God, you're so young to be clean. Because in my head, like...
It kind of excludes.
Right. It excluded me. But also, I was like, damn, I am pretty young. I should live my life a little bit.
Right. Like, maybe I'm not a fuck up like you.
Right. I'm like, I still got time.
I still got time to redeem myself. And
right.
Yeah, I had that same problem. I was 22 and I got clean. So
it was
it's really weird.
It's hard.
All the time when I'm in rehab, especially, like, oh, you're so fucking young. You have to hold up ahead of you. And I'm like, shut the fuck up, man. I don't think that's the shit you want to hear when you're 22. But I see it.
And so I made it like 5 months before she caught me drinking.
Okay. Yeah.
And so she finally caught me, and then she was like, listen, if you're going to be in my house, you cannot be loaded.
On anything.
And she told me that if I got caught again, I was not going to be able to stay in her house.
Okay.
Very strong boundary.
Very strong.
Yes. And so I made it like another 30 days.
Shit.
And then I went and hung out with one of my normie friends, and we had a chill night, okay? It was just like a girls' night. We were drinking some wine.
Okay.
And then I get home, and the next morning, and my mom was like, I need you to pee in this cup for me.
Oh, shit.
And I was like, fuck. I was like, I can't pee.
You didn't have a spare piss? Clean piss on you.
That wasn't my get down.
That's my get down.
I lied when I was using, right? But like, if I had to lie that much, then like, why am I even doing it? You know. But so before I peed in the cup, like I went to her and I was honest and I was like, listen, I drank some wine last night. And she was like, okay, but you still have to pee in this cup. And I'm like, fuck. Because I had smoked weed that night too.
Oh, shit. And so that's a double.
But like knowing my mom now, she cared more about the alcohol than she did about the weed, you know?
I think I'm kind of on that same boat.
Right.
I think, alcohol is a lot more harmful.
Right. But it was hard for me to stay clean for so many reasons, right? But like it was really hard for her to navigate too. Because when I moved back, the age that I was right around the age where she lost her kids.
So you were like a mirror.
Right. And so I'm a fucking newcomer, dude.
Yeah.
And like we all know, I mean, like, I am so loving to the newcomers. However, being a newcomer is fucking hard.
Yeah.
And it's hard for people who have time to deal with newcomers.
Yeah.
And so she has this newcomer kid who she doesn't fucking know living in her home, and she doesn't know what the fuck to do. Right. And me, I'm a newcomer learning how to live life without drugs. And I'm living with this woman who I had this giant resentment against because I felt like she fucking abandoned me. And so prior to moving out here, I had this illusion of like rainbows and butterflies.
Yeah.
It wasn't that at all. We were beefing all the time.
That sounds right.
Right. And, you know, it wasn't until I had had a couple months clean, she asked me if I wanted to go to this women's meeting with her.
Okay.
It's something that, like, her friend throws every year.
Okay.
And it's a small group of women, and they have a meeting, and they fellowship at her house. And
okay.
So she invited me, but she didn't tell me that she was speaking.
Oh.
Right. And
okay.
And so she's speaking at this meeting, and she's talking about all of the things that she had been through, right?
Yeah.
And then she starts talking about her experience of losing her kids.
Mm.
And it opened up our relationship so much. You know, it made me see her as this kid who didn't have any fucking guidance, and now she has two kids and she's fucked up and doesn't know what the fuck to do, you know? And she looked at me and she was like, I've always wanted you. I've always loved you. I was just fucked up. And like all of a sudden, like I lost my resentment for her. You know, because I'm like, she didn't know what the fuck she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so after she had caught me drinking for the second time.
Yeah, gotcha.
She didn't kick me out immediately.
Okay.
She was like, you have 30 days.
Oh, 30 days.
Fair enough. So I moved out and I'm living in this house and I had left the rooms because I'm like, fuck that. I don't need fucking meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fucking addict. You know, I refuse. And so I move into this house and all of a sudden I'm drinking every day.
A little addict-like.
Right. But like, it's fine because it's just wine, right?
Ah, fine wine.
One glass doesn't hurt.
Right. And a couple, oh man, I want to say it was like a month after I moved out, I met my now ex-husband.
Oh, yeah, now we got a husband.
Right, all of a sudden I got a fucking husband. And, you know, we were drinking together every weekend, and it didn't register in my brain that he was one of us.
Oh, okay.
And so we get married real quick, and he is in the military, right? Okay. So he leaves right away, right after we get married. And,
sure.
And so I'm drinking still, right?
Mm-hmm. Without him.
Right. And I'm back to the same exact place, you know? Different drugs, same fucking feelings, you know? And that's my pattern every time. I can change all of the drugs, but it's not the drugs. Like, I am always the fucking problem.
Yeah.
My inability to cope with life on life's terms, my lack of coping skills, the feelings that I feel, and the insanity inside, that's what makes me an addict, you know? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what drugs I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's me. And so had left the rooms for a couple years while I was married to him, and you know, I'm married, and then the kid comes along.
Ah, yeah, baby comes, okay.
Yeah, right.
The sweet baby you have now.
And after I gave birth, you know, I'm dealing with all the postpartum stuff.
Yeah.
You know, especially since they gave me drugs. You know, they gave me fentanyl, and then I had.
They made their pregnancy very painless.
Right. They made it very fucking painless, but I was also high as fuck. And so I give birth, and the postpartum anxiety hits, and the postpartum depression, and the postpartum rage.
Yeah.
The rage was so bad. It was the kind of rage that I hadn't felt in years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so fucking scary to me. And so I would call my mom. And I would talk to my mom about everything that I was feeling. And you know what? She carried the message for me. She carried the message for me in a way that I didn't realize that I was hearing a message.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, one day I'm complaining about my husband, and she was like, yeah, I get like that too when I'm acting out on character defects.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
And there was only one place that I had ever heard that term, you know, character defects, and mm-hmm. that was in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
And like, that was it. That was the very last thing that I needed, and I came back into the rooms.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I saw a lot of the same people that I had before, and all of a sudden I'm married and I have a kid. And they're like, whoa, welcome back. You know? I'm like, plot twist. And so my whole first year in the rooms, I did Zoom meetings.
Okay.
Because I'm all the way up in fucking Fallbrook. I had a kid.
Oh, yeah.
My husband was not helpful. And so the thought of leaving my house to go to a meeting with my child, it was too much.
Well, yeah.
I couldn't fucking do it. I couldn't navigate all of these postpartum feelings, blah, blah, blah. But right after I had a year clean, my husband decided that he wanted a divorce.
Oh, shit.
Yes. And when he decided that, like, I was like, fuck, here's another fucking person that was abandoning me.
Yeah.
But you know what? The reality was like, I didn't want my marriage anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I learned that through step work.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing step work because I wanted to save my marriage. But the reality is step work saved me from my marriage. And so shortly after he told me he wanted a divorce, he went on deployment. And so it's just me and my kid. Yeah. And I'm like, fuck, I'm at home and I have nothing to do and I'm getting fucking antsy. And so I started going to in-person meetings up in North Coastal area.
Okay.
And I finally started getting connected in the rooms.
Nice.
I finally started like building these friendships. And you know what? The timing was absolutely perfect because like 3 months after I started coming in, going to in-person meetings, my best friend died. And it was so fucking gnarly. And like somehow I managed to like get through my divorce clean and I managed to like get through this death clean.
Yeah.
You know, even though I didn't leave my bed for days.
Yeah.
I was still fucking clean.
So clean.
And the rooms taught me how to show up for people. And so I was able to go home and I was able to support all of these people who are addicts just like us.
Yeah.
Through this process.
Yeah.
But they didn't, they don't know that they're addicts, right? Right. So I'm loving them and I'm supporting them and I'm showing up for them in the way that I was taught in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
And so he comes back from deployment and I'm able to like gain a little bit of freedom because for so long, like I was the only person who took care of Scarlett. And so I was able to like branch out in North Coastal.
And, yeah.
And that's when I really started getting connected, you know, and I started working right around like April. So a year ago.
Okay.
And I work in crisis work.
Yeah.
And so my job gets really fucking gnarly.
It can. Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Like, I love my job. Every single person that I work with is having the worst day of their life.
Mm.
The worst day of their life. I'm never working with a happy client.
And, like, they wouldn't be there.
Exactly. You know, and like on one hand, it's a gift. They're allowing me to support them on the worst day of their life.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, it's fucking draining.
Oh, right? Fuck yeah.
And then you add school on top of it.
Yeah.
And like, I wasn't sleeping. I was not sleeping for more than like 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
And I ended up going through something really gnarly at work. And then I was dealing with things in my personal life. And on top of not sleeping, like, I couldn't fucking cope.
Yeah.
I couldn't cope. Those, like, 2 hours of sleep that I had, oh, they yeah, were gone.
Oh, yeah.
They were gone because I was just going through something and I needed it all to stop. And so I fucking picked up, right? I picked up 2 months before I hit 3 years clean. And I went on like a little bender one night and then the next day I was like, fuck, I still want to get high, but Xanax is going to ruin my fucking life again.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was smoking weed until finally like the guilt just got to me, right? Because the beautiful thing about the rooms is like, eventually all of your relationships are centered in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
My friends, my mom, my family, like all of it was centered in the rooms. And so I was like, fuck, I gotta tell myself, you know?
Yeah.
And I told, and no one ever has to get loaded, right? But getting loaded and then telling people, it changed my fucking life.
Oh, telling yourself.
Right. It changed everything. My relationships with people in the rooms. Like, I ended up with, like, a whole new friend group, you know? And these people are fucking incredible. I have never had friends show up for me the way that they do, you know? And you know, lucky me, I relapsed right before the fucking convention.
Yay! You took your white token.
And so I got on stage and announced myself as a newcomer in front of like a thousand fucking people.
Yeah.
And it was...
It was on the screen, too. You could see you.
Oh, man. It was so scary. It was fucking burnt, dude. I'll never do that shit again.
Well, hopefully you don't ever have to.
No, never. And, you know, in the moment, like, I was so overwhelmed that, like, it did not create a spiritual awakening at all, right? But... a couple days after is like when I had my spiritual awakening about it, you know, and like prior to getting on stage, like I had talked to all of my friends about it and was like, I don't know if I want to fucking do this. I don't know if I want to get up in front of all of these fucking people and announce myself as a newcomer.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them were like, no, that's totally understandable. But then one of my friends, she looked at me and she was like, how free do you want to be?
Mm, yeah.
And like at the time, it didn't make sense to me. Right. Because I was like, what the fuck? What does that have to do with freedom? Mm-hmm. You know? But after I had gotten on that stage, it made sense.
Yeah.
You know? But it wasn't about me, you know. Relapse is a thing that happens in the rooms, right? Yeah. And there are some people who are afraid to come back to the rooms because they had some time and they relapsed.
Yeah, that's a real thing.
Right. And so I didn't walk across that stage for me. Like, I walked across that stage and announced myself as a newcomer for that person that's too afraid to come back.
Yeah.
Or that person that's getting loaded and not fucking telling anyone.
Yeah.
You know? Because that's what we do in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
We carry a message and we show up and, like, the newcomer is the most important person.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, now I have 4 months clean.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
4 months.
And it's really cool, you know, the relationships that I have developed since I've relapsed, they're absolutely incredible. I have the most incredible women in my fucking life. And, like, even the men, too. Like, they're cool, you know? They're men that, like, make me feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, for a long time, men didn't make me feel safe.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I'm just so lucky, and I love my fucking life.
Yeah, fuck yeah. My God. I mean, thank you so much for coming on. And, like I said, I mean, you're, like, one of the most, like sweetest, kindest people I've ever met. And I wouldn't even think you would hit people.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what? It's because you make me feel safe, you know? Like,
okay, good. I'm not going to get hit after this.
I'm kind and I'm bubbly to people that, like, make me feel safe. Okay. But, like, if I don't feel safe around you, I'm cold.
Yeah. I'm cold. You're going to get it.
I did stop putting my hands on people. It's okay, been a good. Long very, time very since good. I've put my hands on very, people. Very good.
And, yeah, you know, I just wanted to comment, man. I just think it's amazing what your mom did for you. And, you know, definitely planting some seeds throughout your life. And, you know, you have 4 months, but you have a lot of recovery. You know what I mean? It's really obvious from just this podcast episode alone.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? And I fucking love having you on here. Mm. You know, I definitely would like a sequel episode on... more updates and stuff about you and where you're at. And, you know, and definitely we're going to do some photo shoots and stuff like that too.
Yeah, so some excited. Fun shit.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.